I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
John Dickinson and Daryl the Guru Johnson right here on 95.7 The Game. We're with you for another hour as we get you closer to A's baseball. Rick Tittle comes in at 4, and he'll get you right up to the first pitch. 6:05, it's Madison Bumgarner, it's Trevor Cahill, it's 56,000 expected to be on hand tonight at the Coliseum. They're supposed to break a Coliseum record tonight. And they're supposed to have the biggest crowd in baseball for the 2018 season tonight.
That, what does that mean to you? Because that, to me, that's like, wow, Oakland holds that record. That's a very big deal. 56K.
You know, it's a record for this
so
season.
So if I asked you who had it before that, would you know?
Well, I would think the Dodgers, and I can't remember if it was the Dodgers or not.
I was going to go Yankees.
I would just think the Dodgers just because they have the I mean, there aren't many stadiums where you can even put 56,000 people in them.
True.
Anymore. It's not, again, it's not like the days where you could put 69,000
right.
in a Candlestick, you know, for a big game, or, you know, 65,000 down at Qualcomm or Jack Murphy.
Yeah, I was thinking of Minute Maid Park or just right now. That's
in San Diego.
Yeah,
I mean, it's just. It's hard to pack them in like you used to in those, you know, football stadiums that were completely round.
That's why I'm looking forward to this, to the day that the A's will have a new stadium. It won't be built to fit 50 or 60. It's going to be 25, 30, 35,
yeah,
right?
Probably in the 35 range.
Get that
probably low
that ambiance of, like, you know, it's live in here.
It'd be great. I hope it happens.
Because I like the treehouse. Have you been to the treehouse? At the college?
You know what? I actually haven't yet.
Oh, man, it's awesome.
Believe it or not.
The first time I went in, I didn't know what to expect. I know Townie's always talking about the treehouse. Dude, it's happening. I'll just say that.
It looks great. I'm looking forward to checking it out. Maybe I'll check it out tonight.
TVs
Maybe
of all
I'll
the
check
games.
It out tomorrow.
Chargers for your phone. But AT&T kind of has that all the way around. The stadium. You know, it's like the treehouse is the whole stadium, if you get where I'm going.
Yeah, you know what? I will give the A's credit. And I do think this is an area where Dave Cavill deserves credit.
Been on his,
because they've tried to do as much as you possibly can do for the Coliseum while the Coliseum is the home of the A's. Like, they've tried to do like things like the treehouse and things like the plaza now, the Champions Plaza with the food trucks and the, you know, the history painted on the side.
I love it.
And, you know, trying to do different
the scoreboard
type of gimmicks, you know, to get fans more excited. I think that stuff to try and enhance. Look, the ballpark experience isn't going to be great, but the one thing I always say about the Coliseum is when you actually get to your seat, and you look out on the field, I mean, the field itself is immaculate.
The best grass in baseball.
The field itself is immaculate. So you kind of forget about maybe what's behind you or Mount Davis, which is going to be full tonight. You kind of forget about that, and you just look. You're looking at the field.
Beautiful.
It's not so bad.
No, it's not.
Not so bad at all.
I will say this. I'm getting confused by the game or inning, JD, of what's a home run in Oco. I feel like it changes every year. You know, it hits off the, I'm like, oh, that's out. No, he's still running. But that day will come to where, you know, they're going to be in that their version of AT&T ballpark. I can't wait.
That'd be great. No, there's no question. There's no question it's going to be great and much needed. The hope is obviously sooner as opposed to later. And again, an announcement expected, and it was expected last year, expected this year, early next year.
I got excited. But I would be happy right where it's at now, and with the Raiders leaving, you figure what's in the way, and the Warriors, right?
Yeah, I mean,
I think the possibilities.
I think you'd rather have something. I mean, if you can do it,
okay.
You'd rather have something down by the wall.
No doubt. But if you can't, something new is better than staying with status quo.
Yes. I mean, my like wild if you can't build something completely new, like my wild theory was, and I don't know how feasible this is.
Well, let me hear it. I'm excited.
But my wild theory was always, well, if the Raiders are gone, just blow up Mount Davis and just kind of refurbish.
And see the Oakland Hills again?
And just refurbish the outfield.
Man.
That was kind of my, I mean, I don't know how much that, again, you want to have something new. I'm not saying that's a solution.
Because you're with me. I want it by the water down here
but
in Jack London.
And I'm spitballing when I say that, but the thing that I always thought was, well, if the Raiders are gone, just blow up the outfield, rebuild the outfield, refurbish the concourses, and, you know, there you go.
Let me ask you.
Make the outfield basically look like it did before, only a modern version of it.
No doubt. And pay homage to your history of that green like they do with the Kelly. Dude, that is a grand. Those Kelly green uniforms, JD, that you talk about nostalgia. That is, I mean, the A's have some of the best combos in regard to uniforms of any sport franchise. But I want to ask you about the A's lineup real quick. Simeon leadoff. You like that?
Yeah, I do.
I do too. I feel like he's the poster boy sometimes when things this season. Not so much, but when things don't go good with the A's, I feel like people like to pick on him more so than he deserves. You think that's just me?
I do think that's just you. Why do you think that?
Oh, you know, I think his fielding's gotten a lot better, but you don't hear anything about the games where he's not making errors, or if he puts together a few games to where there is no error. I think I would like to have him up. I'm confident when he's up in a big situation, even if you need a sack fly with a runner on third. I feel like he's smarter and better than a lot of people give him credit on. And that's just me.
I think he's a good player.
I was shocked. I thought you were going to say, uh-huh.
I think he's a good player.
How about his glove?
Significantly improved. I mean, he was the worst shortstop in baseball. And now he's pretty good. He's good. He's decent. I think he's
making strides.
He's solid. I think he's better than solid.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I mean, he's fine.
That game against the Astros, the Luke Roy, when he threw the ball down the field, there was a play where Simeon threw the ball home and it got under Luke Roy's glove. I had A's fans telling me that was a horrible throw. I'm like, dude, you know, the ball was right there. No, it was in the dirt. It was a two-seam. You know, he had to scoop it, but I just, you know, I sit back from afar.
Not every throw is going to be perfect.
I understand, and Buster Posey would have caught that ball and tagged the guy out. I'm just throwing it out there. That was a good enough throw to get that run.
Yeah, but who? Yeah. Wait. What play are we talking about now?
There, Simeon. They had the infield in. It was hit to him. He threw it home to get the bases were loaded to get the runner out at home.
Right.
And
okay.
Luke Roy. We thought he was out, but he couldn't hold on to the ball.
Oh, okay.
And then A's fans, we went at it on Twitter. The throw was in the dirt. The throw. I was like, whoa. And that's why I just said what I did about Simeon, because I think he's improved. Well, text line says his fielding's horrible.
He has improved.
Okay.
He has improved. But again, he was on pace to.
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, it was awful.
To be removed. I mean, it was going that direction.
Ron Washington saved him.
That's big.
And his own, you know, willingness to work on his game.
So this is his spot for the years to come right now.
I think
so. If you're running things, that's where I'm at. I don't know. I just think about when it comes to Simeon.
I mean, why wouldn't it be? He's only 27. He's going to be 28 in September. Yeah, why wouldn't he be?
I like his bat.
I mean, I do think you have to look at, you know, because the question that always gets asked as far as the A's go is who's here for the long haul and who's not.
Mm.
And I think, you know, Olson, I'm looking at some of the Olson's 24. You know, Chapman is 25. You got Simeon, who's 20, going to be 28 coming up in September. You know, the one, Chris Davis, 30. See, those are the guys, like the Davis and Simeon, I think, are on the fringe of, do you want to extend these guys or do you not want to? Like, are they really a part? I mean, Davis is just a power hitter. So,
a prolific one the last 3 years.
And I say JD. Just a power hitter. Okay. I mean, that's great. You want to have guys hit the ball at the ballpark. But as far as your 4 or 5 year plan, like, you want Davis when he's 35, you know, or 34?
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. Look, I don't know the answer to that question, you know, necessarily, but those are tougher questions. You know, Jed Lowry's a little bit older than even those guys, So you just, it makes you wonder, you know, because you hear murmurs, and you know, he's 34. He'll be 35 next April. Yeah.
People play the age game.
You really want to extend Jed Lowry for 3 years? Maybe you do, maybe you don't. I mean, I would trust the A's analytic, and I would trust their analytic department to determine whether a guy will still be productive for 2-3 more years, more than maybe other teams.
Because, I mean, it was a given years past that Jed was going to be gone, you know, in different parts of the season here the last couple of seasons. And now he's just, look at him, man. 282, clutch, could play his position, a great addition and leader to this young A's team.
Yeah, Semien, I think, is a good player.
Batting 254.
Semien's a good player. He was in trouble with his defense, and he worked his tail off to improve. I think you give a guy credit. I think a lot of teams would have changed position. You know, that would have been, you gotta play somewhere else. The A's helped him out. I mean, getting Ron Washington in there,
that was big.
Best coaches and, you know, for infield defense and his ability to work, to want to get better and to be coached, I think deserves a lot of credit.
Yeah, from the 510, Semien is a notch below a Gold Glover who could, if you asked him to, hit you 15 to 20 homers a year and also put together a strong on-base percentage. I believe that if I was a teacher, I'd grade that an A-.
Good player. But the A's have to balance who's long-term versus the now and, you know, what guys are going
to
be there.
And what do you have
when
to
they get
them?
Into the okay. new ballpark? Right. But you have to figure out when you're going to get into the new ballpark first. Like, you don't know the math until, you know, is the ballpark 22? Is the ballpark 23? Or is it going to be more like 24, 25?
Don't say that.
If it's more like 24, 25, then maybe this group isn't the group that you're going to be signing to big money extensions. But all that's down the line.
Yeah.
Right now it's about...
And Barreto's out there lurking.
Tonight.
Yeah, gotcha.
Right now it's about Bumgarner and Cahill and 56,000 and a big game because these teams are 2-2 against each other. And if you're into the trophy, the winner of the game... If you're into the trophy, the winner of the game tomorrow gets the trophy. Forget like tonight, you can lose 10-0, it doesn't matter.
Gotcha.
The winner of the game tomorrow gets the trophy.
Get it out your system.
Winner of the game tomorrow gets the trophy. All right. John Dickinson, Daryl the Guru Johnson... John Morosi is going to join us at 3:30. More of your phone calls coming up right here on 95.7 The Game. All right, John Dickinson, Daryl the Guru Johnson, keeping it moving on a Saturday afternoon and on into the evening here on 95.7 The Game. Well, we're going to bust out here in about 40 minutes. Hand it off to Rick Tittle as the A's and Giants set to go game 2 of the 3-game series, game 5 of 6 in the Battle of the Bay 2018 edition. As these times, teams, it feels like they've been playing each other for 3 weeks straight. It's just 5 games, but with the All-Star break in between 2 3-game series, it's 6 straight on the schedule, which I thought was kind of odd when I first looked at the schedule, but it's actually been pretty cool.
Yeah, I just told you earlier, I hated the break. I would
never do it. I would hate it if it was 6 straight.
Why?
I would just.
Because you gotta play 6 straight anyway.
Well, you don't have to play 6 straight.
Well, you know, they would have 2
you
series.
You play 3-3.
Yeah.
I wouldn't like it.
Get Oakland
six
on
straight.
Fire and then pay your toll and come the Giants. I like it.
You know what I would like to see 1 year though? I'm going to contradict myself a little bit. You know what I actually would like to see? I would like to see 1 year where you play one game at one place. You play a doubleheader and you play one game at one place and one game at another place.
Hey, oh Ernie Banks, I like that. The old doubleheader.
I want to see the doubleheader. I don't know how you'd have to do it to make it work. Right, but you play a day game at the Coliseum, and then play a night game over at AT&T, 1:00 and 7:15.
Now, you may not know this about me, but I'm a big uniform guy, JD. Being that they're going to pay homage to the 89 team, are they going to wear those uniforms? I should know this, right?
Well, what's my question?
Yeah, why wouldn't you?
But my question is, what's different?
The jerseys. They at that time they didn't even have the button down. They had the white ones. Yeah,
they had the button.
Yeah, yeah. I was just picturing Canseco and the rest of the gang.
You're thinking of the pullover
ones?
Yeah,
the pullover, the V-necks. Yeah.
But that wasn't there.
You're right.
It was a little earlier.
Yep. So they would pretty much have what they got now. So no, you know.
So you answered your own question.
Yeah, exactly, and I'm good.
Okay. All right. John Morosi is going to join us coming up in about 10 minutes here on 95.7 The Game. We'll get into some baseball conversation with him. I want to hit a little football here.
Let's do it.
Before, are you ready for training camp? I mean, in one way, this Battle of the Bay has been perfectly timed this year in that it's after the Warriors are done and right before football. It's tucked away. You know, baseball's kind of taken center stage here for about 3 weeks, and the A's have been hot, and the Giants are hanging in.
I want to throw NBA in there, though, too, JD, because this summer league thing and this LeBron thing. I mean, dude, it was on three stations a couple weeks ago. My point is, I just feel like it's not just baseball. It's the NBA taken away from training camp. I used to get goosebumps 2 weeks before what's about to happen here in the next week or two, but the NBA is just, after the finals, is still going, JD.
It's starting to die down, though.
Yeah, no doubt.
It's dying down.
Who's left? Yeah.
Like, DeMarcus Cousins comes in and has his press conference for the Warriors Thursday.
Surprisingly, LeBron hasn't had one.
LeBron's not going to have one.
That means that's weak.
They actually made an announcement that there wasn't going to be anything until training camp. There's not going
to
be anything, I think, until the Laker media.
Think he probably the one that said do it?
Absolutely.
That's odd.
So, I mean, it's...
What are you hiding?
I mean, I think Palenka and Magic Johnson had a press conference.
Yeah, but...
But LeBron wasn't.
Yeah, there was no... I don't care about that press conference.
I mean, yeah, because LeBron James is not going to have to talk to the media at all. Once the season starts,
God plays by his own rules.
Who cares?
I do that.
I mean, you don't need that. It's like sometimes I think we get a little. I say we're going to talk football and we're going to talk a little NBA maybe instead. But sometimes we crave the constant. You got to keep feeding the beast, feeding the storyline. It's like, who cares if LeBron doesn't talk till September? What is he going to say now that like? What does he have to say now that he can't say in September?
I just thought he is running from answering, why did you leave Cleveland again?
Because he's never going to have to answer that. He's going to answer it. He's just not going to answer it until September.
Right. So it's just delayed.
You're right. It's not like he's not going to. But see, my whole thing is, what drives me nuts is when people have to answer something 10 times.
No doubt.
Like, it's one time, it's done. Like, you don't need... Like, okay, DeMarcus Cousins, I get. DeMarcus Cousins, he's coming over. That's a major signing. That DeMarcus Cousins, that warrants a press conference. Steve Kerr doesn't need to have a press conference because he signs his extension. And they aren't having one. I'm sure Steve Kerr wouldn't want one. Steve Kerr can talk about his extension on Media Day because at that point, there shouldn't be really too much that happens to where you need to ask him about his extension.
But the best player in the game.
But what I think the media wants, you got Kerr, you got to talk about it the day it happens. You got to talk about it, when they sign somebody else. He's going to talk about it Labor Day. He's going to talk about it the first training camp. He's going to talk about it the first. No, he's talking about it once. You get over with. It's done. You don't need somebody answering the same thing five times.
Now, for that example there with Kerr, you got me.
Kevin Durant's another one. Like, does Kevin Durant?
No, that's
Kevin
different.
Durant comes back. He doesn't need anything.
Nope.
Okay.
But that was status quo. But LeBron coming to a story franchise and the ghost of Kareem and Magic and Kobe. Man, people got questions. And also, real quick, what went into your mindset? If I can just ask you politely,
sure.
JD, you be LeBron James. LeBron, why did you feel the need to leave Cleveland again? That's what I feel like he's running from. But you said he may answer it on his own.
It's not like he's never going to be made available to the media again. He's going to get asked all those questions. He's just going to get asked on September.
Yeah.
Let me give you the day. It's a rough estimate, but he's going to he'll be asked on September 21st or 24th.
But then it's all about Lakers and, there is no. This was like a State of the Union again for LeBron. Just give us some insight as to why you laugh again.
Why does LeBron have to answer on July 10th and then answer on September 21st or 24th? Because it's going to be the same stuff.
Well, I have no answer for you there, but I just feel like, when you're one of the ambassadors of the league, you know people want to talk. You know it's about you.
I kind of liked it.
The muteness?
I kind of liked it when it was like, nah, he's not having any availability to training camp. I was like, good.
I bet you Kawhi will talk when he introduced him. Because they're proud of that. I think this feels kind of dirty.
What's dirty about it?
I don't know. Why are you not having a presser? That's what makes me feel like, who's not feeling?
He had one the last time he left.
Well, you're right there. So what's changed?
What do you mean?
I don't get why.
He's grown up.
See?
Go ahead. No,
you don't think nobody's coming down him from going to the Lakers? And it's his choice. I think LeBron, deep down in his gut, feels some type, what did the kid say? Some type of way about going to that franchise. Something doesn't
well, he's gonna
add
answer
up.
That.
Something
to,
but like, why not do
like
it?
The first question is going to be, LeBron, what went into your decision to come to the Lakers? Why did you want to be a Laker? And he'll answer it.
Yeah,
LeBron,
but, yeah,
why did you leave Cleveland again?
JD,
were they not
you.
Good enough? Why? I mean, those questions are going to be asked. They're just
no doubt. But why do we? Why are you? It's like he's throwing the middle finger up to the press and the NBA world, dude. Why can't you just go to the presser? I don't know. I feel like that's like my mom telling me, "Get your clothes on. We're going to church." And then you know what? I don't feel like going to church today. Y'all go to church. I'll be here when you get back. Can't do that, but he can do that to Magic and play and have them go do their own. Dude, that was weak to me. Shaq did one when he left Orlando and went to LA because they were proud. Everybody was on the same. Something just seems off here that he didn't have a presser and he's going to do it when he's ready for it after everything dies down.
I'm going to put myself in LeBron James'
go ahead.
Shoes.
John LeBron.
If I'm John LeBron.
I meant to say James.
That's okay.
Yeah.
If I'm John LeBron and I'm signing with the Lakers on July 1st,
gotcha.
I think it was, where he agreed to terms and it's official whenever.
The world's waiting for you to make your decision.
I don't want to answer the questions on July 15th and September 24th because I'm going to have to answer them again on September 25th. And then I'm going to have to answer them again on October 1st. And then I'm going to have to answer them again when I go back to Cleveland. And then I'm going to have to answer them again when I get into the playoffs. And then I'm going to, like, I wouldn't want to do. I would not want to deal with it knowing that I'm going to have to deal with every question all season long for 9 months. Knowing that, the world can wait 2 months. The world can wait.
When you're LeBron, it can. I feel like what you're saying, I don't disagree with, but the LeBron that I think I know, why do I feel like he needs this downtime to get his answers right? Like he's feeling some type of way to where he's not comfortable in his skin to just go to this presser, ask a few questions, and guess what? Training camp, he's in the Laker uniform, practice stuff. It's all about him and the Lakers. But to drag
it's
this
gonna
out.
It's going to be, though. It's going to be about, there's going to be 6 weeks before the season starts when that happens.
I think Laker fans feel cheated that LeBron couldn't give him a presser.
He's
going to
give him a presser.
He's in
just,
the winter,
can't the guy enjoy his vacation? He's been to 8 straight finals.
Oh, man. I'm shocked that this is. I thought you would be like, you know, that was a bit odd, Guru.
Because I'm a media guy that doesn't think that everybody has to be constantly fed over and over and over and over and over. He can answer September 24th.
Hey, John LeBron, Magic said he was out in front of your house for an hour. How did that make you feel? Did you look out the blinds? Did you know he was out there? Stuff like that. But now comes September, it's football season, Rams playing. Hey, LeBron, it totally changes.
Let's get to our next guest. We'll switch gears. We'll talk some baseball. John Morosi, MLB Network, Fox Sports, NHL Network. He joins us here on 95.7 The Game. But, John, random question. Thanks for coming on the show. We were just throwing this around. As a longtime veteran reporter, LeBron James signs with the Lakers but defers the press conference until media day right before the, you know, before training camp. Is that fair or unfair, or should he have to address it at some point in July?
I would say it is unconventional,
John
and Guru, as we begin our conversation. I certainly a decision of that magnitude, given all the interest in him in so many different cities around our country and around the world, I would say that perhaps a press conference a little bit ahead of that timetable would be warranted, but the king is entitled to his own counsel on this one, and certainly he has talked a lot publicly over the years, and he's so accessible during the course of the NBA playoffs. So he certainly it is his right to say that. I think I'd make this point. I was just in Cleveland actually last weekend to work a baseball telecast, Yankees and Indians, and I would say that I did not really sense a whole lot of antipathy toward LeBron James for this decision. He had come back home. He had won a championship there. I'm sure there are some fans that are upset that he's left again, but I really believe this is a fundamentally different circumstance than what he had when he left Cleveland the first time. And I think going to L.A. and the ability to do all the things you can in that city, I think there's a good level of understanding on the part of the fans of Northeast Ohio and probably the rest of the country for that matter. So maybe there are fewer difficult questions for him to answer this time than the previous occasions in which he changed teams.
John, that's a great answer. And as somebody that was in the building during Game 4, which was his last game with the Cavs before leaving again, it was an odd vibe. There was a hint of almost sadness, like resignation that, well, of course he's going to leave now. This team's getting swept. They're not good enough. He got the championship. It was really an odd vibe, compared to, the anger and different things, from years past.
Right. No, that's a very good point. And I think this time around, maybe it felt a little bit like graduation. That sounds like it's a little awkward phraseology there, but it's almost like he was graduating now to a higher place where there was maybe a higher level of understanding of why he was leaving, and maybe even a little bit of pride. I mean, he brought that city a championship that it hadn't had since the 1950s, and that's a pretty special thing to be able to do for his hometown. I think that's a really unique part of his legacy, and no matter what happens, if you think about, and certainly in baseball, we're preparing in about a week's time to enshrine the latest Hall of Fame class in Cooperstown. If you have the hat analogy, if LeBron were going to the Hall of Fame with a hat on, that'd be a Cleveland hat. I think he is forever going to be Cleveland and certainly Akron, but in a more global sense, he is Cleveland. That is his team. I will always think of him as a Cavalier. He can win a championship with the Lakers. He can win multiple championships with the Lakers, but I'm always going to think about him as a Cav, and I would imagine a lot of neutral observers around the country probably feel the same way. So, to me, I think he's fascinating because every step he has taken in his career has been for a specific purpose. And I think all of us, as we talk about the All-Star game this past week in baseball, I think we all know the contours of his career and his decisions in his life about as well as we know any other contemporary athlete's path. We know where he played his high school basketball. We know that he went number one overall in a historically great draft class. And again, I'm saying all these things as a baseball and hockey guy. Right. And yet his journey is so well known to all of us. I think he is truly a unique star for our time. And I think he has done, when we look back, I think he has done an exemplary job of representing our country in the Olympics, but also what it means to be a superstar in these times. I think he's done a very good job of managing all the demands on his time. Social media in the spotlight. I think LeBron James has done an outstanding job as a superstar and a celebrity of this era.
Great stuff, John. Let's switch gears and talk a little bit of baseball. The A's deal for Juris Familia is complete. He's coming over. What do you make of what the A's, that deal and how it helps them, and really just this hot streak that the A's have been on for the last month? Do you feel this team is for real? Obviously, the division is very difficult, and the path to the wild card still is difficult with them four games back of Seattle. But what do you think of this A's team and being able to bolster the pen that's already been really good?
Well, they've been a great story, and I really enjoyed just watching this team come together over a period of time and how this young group, maybe not a lot was expected of them. The way they have played this year has been extraordinary, especially since about the beginning part of June, and now they're getting their players back, and Chapman, his health, the bullpen's been dynamic. a lot of different schools of thought as to why you add Familia here. Certainly, they've had to lean very heavily on Trinan and Lou Trevino, who I think has really gone under the radar. But I can tell you this, I was speaking recently with another manager in the American League, and he was raving about young Lou Trevino and what he represents and his dynamic pitching ability out of the bullpen for the A's this year. So certainly this team is catching a lot of attention around the league. And I heard Jeff Joyce, an analyst with XM, make the point that maybe because there is not an abundance of starting pitching out there that is viewed as real impact starting pitching, that maybe we're seeing GMs be more aggressive in the realm of relief pitching. Because if you upgrade your bullpen, maybe the mentality is that you're going to be able to shorten the game a little bit. You know that you're going to be going to the same arms very often if you're playing a lot of low-scoring and or one-run games as the A's have been doing here lately. So I think it was a very savvy move, a reasonable acquisition cost with Will Toffey and Bobby Wall being the key pieces there in addition to the $1 million in international slot money. So I think the acquisition cost was fair. The reasoning behind it was sound, and they're going for it, and they should, because really it is a one-versus-one contest for the second American League wild card between the A's and the Mariners. I do not see either of those two teams passing the Astros, and as a result, we know one of the wild cards will belong to the Red Sox or the Yankees, and the other one is very much up for grabs. The key thing that's what's different for the A's than it is for the Giants, there are no additional teams for Oakland to have to pass by to get that second wild card spot. The team they're chasing is the only team they have to beat in the Seattle Mariners. They play them a ton of times between now and the end of the season. So I like their chances, the A's chances, to make this a very interesting race and potentially even pass the Mariners by and claim that second American League wild card.
John, great stuff as always, and I know you bring it, so I don't get to talk to you much, so I got to ask you this question about last week's All-Star game. I know baseball implemented the selfies with the umps, and I was kind of the old guy on the lawn saying I didn't like that, but I did enjoy last week's All-Star game. But what I didn't like, John, and I need your opinion, is Manfred having the audacity to tell Mike Trout, one of the game's greats, that they need help in him promoting himself. What did you think of those comments, and do you think Manfred wishes he hadn't went public with that?
Well, Guru, here's how I feel about this. I think that, number one, I think baseball unfairly gets criticized a lot for the lack of overall superstar notoriety of its players. From having worked in a broadcast capacity with the league, I think the league does a very good job of giving players the tools to get their names and their faces and their stories out there more often. I also think the players, many of them, I think are unfairly blamed for the lack of notoriety. You think about, I look at a player like Giancarlo Stanton. He has tried to do advertising. He has done national interviews. He has represented his country twice in the World Baseball Classic, which comes along with some marketing abilities there. Of course, he's won a gold medal there for that team. He has done a lot. Aaron Judge has done more and more as time has gone on. I think Mike Trout, I think what the commissioner said in general was very well taken. Mike Trout declined the opportunity twice to represent his country in the World Baseball Classic, and that is one of the best marketing vehicles the game has. It happens at a time of year when more of the focus can be on our national pastime, and where a star, if you win the World Baseball Classic gold medal, I think you have a little higher platform there. Mike Trout has only played in one playoff series. He has not won a game in the playoffs. So there are the Angels, and their lack of success is part of the story. Trout, could he be a bit more dynamic as a personality? Perhaps, but that's not really his personality. That's not really him. So I think the responsibility to market goes all the way around. And I also think one of the things that doesn't get talked about enough is the players' general schedule during the course of the year. They play every single day. And if you were going to think about ways for a basketball player, whether it's LeBron or Blake Griffin or anybody else around the league that's interested in some crossover work or acting or marketing, they've got open days in their schedule on which to do those things. Baseball players simply don't. There's just not the time to do it. They're at the ballpark every single day, all summer long. And I think that the tonnage of the games in baseball, I believe this strongly, it is both a blessing and a curse for the marketing of the Stars, because every single game, every single day, they're on television. They're playing. So they're out in front of the public all the time. That being said, each individual game is only one of 162. So it's hard for your casual fan, if you live in Maryland, if you live in New York or Florida, to invest that much in every single Mike Trout game the way that you might follow Tom Brady. Tom Brady plays 16 games a year. You know exactly what day of the week he's going to play, and you can sit there and watch 3 hours of Tom Brady a week and know what you need to know about Tom Brady. Mike Trout plays 21 or 25 or 27 hours of baseball a week. To follow him every day is a full-time job. And frankly, in the pace of our country right now, we don't have that amount of space to give to any one baseball player. So there's a lot of blame to go around here for why baseball players are not as big a celebrity as they should be. I think the commissioner's points actually were very, very well taken. It's going to take, I believe, an extraordinary player with an extraordinary personality playing for an extraordinary team to again have any baseball player achieve the level of celebrity and stardom that we saw with Derek Jeter.
John, let's switch gears a little bit on the Giants. We talked about the A's. The Giants have just kind of been hanging in there. I think the story of their year is they're hanging in there. Guys are out. Guys come back. Other guys go out. They're hanging in there. Do you think this team has it in them to actually make a significant run? And when I look at them in the deadline, they seem like the quintessential do-nothing team. What do you see with the Giants?
I agree. I think second part of the question first. I love trade rumblings and trade conversations and blockbuster trades. So I will spend time thinking about every team. And I have spent some time thinking about the Giants, what they can do. And I came to the same conclusion as you. As much as I would love to tell the great people of San Francisco that I foresee blockbuster deals for the Giants, I simply don't. They've already spent a lot of money. They've got their pitching back healthy now for the most part, with Bumgarner pitching today in the Bay Bridge series there, and tomorrow, of course, Cueto's on the mound. I just don't see a ton for them to do. Maybe one bat for the outfield, but it's probably not going to be a huge name. I'm not expecting a massive superstar, all-star bat. Maybe a platoon guy, but that's probably it. Someone to replace basically Austin Jackson, but then again, we've seen Duggar already come up. I think for them, the one of the better, I think, long-term stories for this team is the way that Rodriguez has come up and pitched. Of course, he got the win yesterday. There have been some really nice stories of young contributors coming up for the Giants where the long-term picture is better than I thought it would be. All that being said, I agree with you. I think that they stand pat, but you look at the way the standings are set up right now, guys, I think there is a path for this team to get into a wild card spot. Just four games back of the second position, the Brewers, they did not get Machado, so I think they are somewhat vulnerable. The Diamondbacks, the Rockies, they've got a lot of games still in the division to play, even though the Rockies have won six games in a row. So I think in general, while the Giants haven't played great baseball, they've played well enough, in my estimation, to be a major factor in the National League wild card race for the balance of this season.
John, you're spot on. I've been telling JD and Giant fans that same thing. And instead of thinking, you know, a baseball god is going to fall out the sky where you could put him in your lineup, you need guys like McCutchen, Belt, and Buster Posey, the face of this team, to just step it up maybe just a notch or two. And I'm not blaming those guys, but I feel like if the Giants are going to get that second wild card, I feel like Posey and the rest of the gang have gotten somewhat of a pass, John, in regard to, you know, Posey's batting 280. If he were to bat 300 and come up big in situations where I've seen him just ground out to shortstop, this team could get and accomplish their goal that they set out in spring training.
Well, that's a very good point, and I think you look at Posey year over year, the power production probably is the biggest difference from where he was. 2014, he hits 22 homers, 19 the year after that, 14, 12, and he's got 5 now. So it's set up to decline now for a fourth consecutive year for Posey from a standpoint of the power. And when you look at a veteran team, Guru, I think that's a very good point, because one of the things that you count on when you've got a veteran lineup is they're going to hit their stride the middle of the year. Maybe they're not so great in April, but a veteran team, a lot of savvy there, they're going to figure it out and get better as the year goes along. I look for, and certainly McCutchen has been a streaky player over the course of his career. I look for a great August from McCutchen. I think Crawford certainly having a very solid year. But Posey, I agree, a 770 OPS. He can do better than that. I think Hanson has become a really solid, nice number two hole hitter for them here in recent days. But I'm with you. I think maybe getting Longoria back healthy and then a better second half from McCutchen and from Posey. You count on your veterans at this time of year, and those are the guys that have to produce for the San Francisco Giants to make it back to the playoffs.
Final question for you, John. I might be a prisoner of the moment here with Manny Machado coming to the Dodgers. Is there any way you could see him and the Dodgers just falling in love with each other to the point where he winds up staying there and they shift some things around? I know Seager's coming back next year and all of that, but do you see a scenario where that could be in play?
I do. It would involve a lot of maneuvering where maybe next year it would be Seager at short, Manny at third, Turner at second. They haven't really locked in their long-term plan at second, although Max Muncy may be part of that picture, depending on how often he plays first, with Bellinger maybe playing some outfield. I think it is unlikely that he ends up staying in L.A. beyond the end of this year. I think that there's going to be strong interest for him outside, and I agree it'd be hard, I think, to move Turner coming off of some injuries this year. Seager, of course, has missed almost all the year. I don't see a long-term fit, but then again, I've been surprised before, and I don't underestimate. You think about Machado and L.A., the opportunities to market himself there are certainly viable, and we talked about being a crossover star. I mean, Manny Machado has as much superstar quality about him as probably any player in the game, and even, I think, you think about the personality, the style he plays with, he may well be a bigger star right now, and Southern California has a chance to be, I should say, by the end of the year. If the Dodgers win the World Series, his star may well outshine that of Mike Trout. Mike Trout's probably the better all-around player, but Machado can be the bigger star. And I do think baseball needs stars. It may be best for baseball if Manny Machado stays in L.A. and wears the number 8 for a long period of time.
Yeah, and call me crazy. He just looked good in the uniform. It just looked like it fit.
There's something to be said for that. He's a guy, loves the history of the game. I think it's a great spot for him. Of course, he's from Miami originally, so maybe at some point in time he looks forward to moving back to the East Coast. But his agent is based out in L.A. A lot of things you can do when you're a superstar player in your mid-20s in Los Angeles with a lot of crossover ability for somebody that likes the spotlight like Manny does. So it's a great spot for him to go, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if the Dodgers find some way to keep Manny Machado there in Los Angeles.
John, thanks a lot for the time, man. We really appreciate the extended conversation out here on a Saturday afternoon.
My pleasure. You know, I apologize for my maybe not totally well-informed basketball takes on LeBron, but I hope I sounded okay, all right?
No, it was great
phenomenal
stuff. And you kind of sided with LeBron, which is going to tick everybody off out here in the Bay.
My bad. I'm sorry. You know, I realize I'm wading into a basketball rivalry between your two great cities, but I'll have a good time watching it unfold during the course of this year and a few more to come.
Thanks a lot, John. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure, guys. Thank you.
John Morosi. Great stuff. Great LeBron answer.
And
my guy John Morosi.
I love how Machado tied in number 8 being a Kobe fan.
Yeah.
That was sick.
Dude. There was something
like,
about it.
That's
that
how
I just
you
thought,
get
wow,
them to love you. Well, they love you already, but man.
It just looked like it fit. Like sometimes
I don't think he's
going
anywhere, Jake.
I mean, Machado's been talked about for a couple of, you know, who's going to get him, and the Dodgers are interested, and he's going to get traded eventually. Like that's been a topic for a while. And you just never really, I thought, oh, yeah, he may go to the Dodgers and Seager's out, so it makes sense this year. But then you see it and you go, wow, like that kind of, that pops.
And if you're a Diamondback fan or a Rocky fan or, you know, a Philadelphia, Philly fan, you got to hate watching rich teams like the Dodgers get the pretty girl over and over again. I mean, it happens in football with the Cowboys or the Steelers or, you know, the has and have nots. And the fact that the Dodgers, first place without Machado, just go out and get him. No big deal, JD. And he may be a fixture and retire there in L.A. Must be nice, man.
Yeah, it was just, I mean, it was throwing it around in my mind, like thinking, well, if he would he play short, could Seager play third, Turner would go to second, maybe a trade Turner, you know, he's, it's, he's getting up there, you know, maybe you deal him because you got Machado. So it just, you know, it was just, and again, a prisoner of the moment. It's one game.
Yeah, they're undefeated with Manny.
You said that today, almost three out of window.
Yeah, you and Nick caught that one.
They played one game. Yeah, what are you talking about?
Right, it is now.
They're undefeated for crying out loud. What do you see the next two games, the Bay Bridge series? Because this, you know, been a lot of focus on the Giants, been a lot of focus on the A's these last couple of weeks as the NBA has died down, the NFL's around the corner. I know we're going to get into a ton of NFL starting next week.
But I'm
we tried
you,
to get an NFL today. We ended up talking
got a lot.
More hoop.
Let me tell you this. I'm fearful that this A's home record, even though it's 25-23, is problematic. And who could have foreseen that, you know, this magical run that they're on, this magical season they're having, that they get better results on the road than at home? And if somehow they can't beat Bumgarner, who's getting stronger, pitched pretty good against him a couple Saturdays ago, then tomorrow the A's wake up and you're looking at a possibility of a sweep at home. And that's not the way you would want to get off to, you know, in regard to the second half by name only, because we're past, you know, 81 games. So I think it's very important that the A's get a win tonight or tomorrow, JD.
Yeah, and I think they, I mean, I don't see, I could see the A's winning two. I could see it being a split the next two.
Because Cueto,
you know,
last start.
I don't think Cueto's been good at all. I really don't.
So do you think that's coming, though? That's why I'm going like...
No, I think he's going to have to show me. I don't think... I'm not giving him the benefit of the doubt. He just doesn't look fully healthy and comfortable. And
looks a little heavy, but
confident.
He's always had that, yeah.
Yeah, I don't worry about the heavy. I'm just worried about him trusting his stuff.
All right.
Does he trust the elbow? Does he trust the arm? Can he really let it fly?
Mm.
And I'm not... I don't know. He just hasn't looked right. So I need to see it. So If you're looking at me, Giants struggle against lefties. Cueto's been eh. I look at tomorrow as a game the A's get, and tonight becomes a game. You know, maybe somebody hits a 3-run homer against Bumgarner. Maybe tonight's a game where they steal it late, which is what the A's have been doing in a lot of series. So that might have to be the path today, and I kind of see the A's winning tomorrow.
Yeah, and if you're the Giants and somehow you get it done tonight, regardless of what happens tomorrow, you got to feel good about taking two out of three and returning the favor of the young athletics, making you look old in your own park just less than 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, and I don't the A's at some point are going to get hot again. I don't know, like I was telling you earlier.
I love how you say that.
Like it might not be tonight. You know, Bumgarner could be great and they get shut down again and it's, you know, what's going on? And the All-Star break cooled them off and all the, all the.
I hate that.
But at some point, whether it's early tonight, it's whenever it does click and something goes well for them, then I think they're going to get on another roll, whether that's tonight or tomorrow, or maybe it doesn't happen until they get to Texas, you know, whatever. But once they get clicking again, they get that first one under their belt, they get into a little bit of a rhythm again playing every day, they get that first one where they steal it, you know, and maybe they shouldn't win, then I think they're going to get on another roll. I'm with John Morosi. I think they're going to end up getting that wild card.
Because I do
I
like
think they're
going
to pass them.
You know, metrics of who's hot after the All-Star break. You get where I'm going?
Absolutely.
But the A's won that Sunday game against the Giants, dropped last night. So when you say they're going to get hot again, well, they really haven't had the opportunity to get cold.
And it might, you're right. They're not cold yet.
Yeah, okay.
They're not cold yet, but again, we've got a couple texts.
No doubt.
I mean, you're almost there.
Yeah, it's coming.
They lose 3-0 tonight, you're freaking out tomorrow.
No doubt.
I know you're not going to be on till Monday at 10 with Steiny, but if the A's lose 4-2 tonight and don't hit a home run, you're kind of freaking out, aren't you?
And now I got why I'm freaking out.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay.
And the home record is freaking me out. That's freaking me out more, JD.
And what I'm saying is don't worry about that.
Right.
If you lose tonight, you win tomorrow, you get wrong,
right,
it's okay.
All right. It's still
okay.
In front
you're
of
not
you.
Going to go 20-5. The rest of the way.
You could. Yeah, I'm just mad.
But you're not.
Yeah, right.
You're not going to go.
But I hear
you're
you.
Not going to go 50-10.
Okay, gotcha.
To finish the year. All right, want to thank everybody. The calls were great today. The texts were great, as always, on the PenskeAutoSales.com text. I want to thank Dino. want to thank Nick for putting the show together. Susan Slusser of the Chronicle, Monty Poole of NBC Sports Bay Area. We also were joined by John Morosi. Our thanks to him, MLB Network, and Fox, and the guy covers hockey as well for the NHL Network. Just tremendous answers on LeBron. Our thanks to him, and of course, Tim Flannery. Thanks to him as
Put
well.
Put the cell phone down.
Rick Tittle is coming your way next, and then it's the A's, and it's the Giants, it's the Bay Bridge Series, it's game 2 of 3, game 5 of 6, and you'll hear it right here on 95.7 The Game.
Okay. Picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.